drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. So we're talking more and more about diversity in the arts, in music, on TV, in comedy. Seeing people with different backgrounds on stage and on screens is recognised as pretty important. But turn around for a moment, look past the blinding stage lights and try and look out into the stalls. How diverse are the people in the actual audience? Donna Walker Kuhn is the author of Invitation to the Party and the Vice President of Community Engagement at the New Jersey Performing Arts Centre. She's also joined by Dr. Wendy Weir, the Executive Director of Arts Strategy at the Australia Council for the Arts. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Donna, your focus is really on diversity in the audience, creating and marketing theatre in a way that attracts an outside audience, you know, outside of that traditionally very white, very upper middle class or just middle class audience. What drew you to this work?
You know, I think I first started to realize the gap in audiences when I was the marketing director for Dance Theatre of Harlem. At the time, it was an African-American ballet company. We were traveling all around the country, and the audiences were predominantly white. And so the artistic director, Arthur Mitchell, asked me, he said, Donna, find out where are the black people? And so I asked the presenters, I said, well, how come the community's not coming? We were in Chicago and, you know, L.A., major urban cities. And so they said to me, we want them too, but we don't know how to do it. And so that led me to create a strategy, engaging the community, cultural leaders, giving them goals, collateral materials, tools, running it like a campaign, but empowering the community to own the work.
Did you identify why people weren't coming?
Yes. They were not invited.
Wow.
It's as simple as that.
Really?
Yes. That's why I named my book Invitation to the Party. You know, people of color like to be invited. We don't just go. We want to make sure we'll be safe and honored and respected. And so to go into a theater facility you've never been to before, I'm not sure. Will they be welcoming? Who's there? Do I know anyone that's there? So the welcome, the invitation means someone that looks like you said come, that the material said that you'll be welcome, that you're going to have a great experience. All of those factors are so important.
How much of it is also about culture? And I don't mean people's culture the way we think of it. I mean the culture of what you've been brought up with. So if your parents go to the theatre, you know, you're going to go to the theatre. But if you didn't see it happening, you don't do it.
Yes. And it's very difficult to break into that, which is why we hoped that the schools would also take a part of that. But because we know the arts programs are being diminished, you know, increasingly, and if the families aren't doing it, then yes, it's very difficult.
Wendy, does this resonate in Australia? Are you seeing the same kind of thing with Australian audiences?
Yes, I'd agree with that. I mean, Donna is a regular visitor to Australia, aren't you, Donna? So
yes.
I'm imagining, would have watched quite an evolution over time since you've been coming here as well in terms of the diversity of Australians.
Yes.
Generally. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we've just had the census data come out, which shows that one in four Australians, you know, wasn't born here. And I think that incredible rich diversity of our communities is something which in some ways the arts sector has been catching up with. And we released a piece of research in 2015, which was around diversity and cultural expression, which was exactly about that, to encourage people to be thinking, you know, you want the art that is in your galleries and on your stages and that you read to be representative of the community in which you live. So I think there's been a lot of really progressive work that has been moving to close that gap. I think the gap still exists, but it's definitely starting to shift quite dramatically. Mm-hmm. And we've had some really interesting things like Asiatopia that was just in Melbourne recently, you know, large multi-month festival, which I believe the early data is still coming through, but they are suggesting that more than half of their audiences came from diverse backgrounds, which is a massive shift and something you certainly wouldn't have seen 10 years ago.
Donna, can you give me an example of how you go about diversifying audiences? Is there a project you're particularly proud of that really had a very strong impact on bringing people through the doors?
Yes. Gosh, there's so many. But I would say working in dance, because dance was the first genre that I was able to really work in. And so with the Dance Theatre of Harlem, we were invited to perform at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And at that time, Brooklyn was not as sexy and attractive as it is now. And so usually people, white people, particularly from the Upper East Side of Manhattan, did not come to Brooklyn because they needed a passport, inoculation, interviews, all kinds of things. So they didn't come. And so the question was, we have BAM, we have Brooklyn. Who's coming to see a ballet company? We don't believe that we want to be successful. Liking a challenge like I do, I said, watch. And so one of the things I did was to cultivate the communities of color in Brooklyn. Really, I really focused on Brooklyn. So serendipity had a lot to do with our success. I had a doctor's appointment, and my doctor said, I'm going to a meeting after I see you. And I said, where are you going? She said, I'm going to a meeting with the Provident Clinical Society, which is a group of black doctors and nurses. So I said, why don't you buy out opening night? And she said, how do we do that? And so for the next 6 months, we worked on that. A month before the performance date, we'd only sold about 20% of the tickets, and I took them off sale. We're talking 4,000 seats. And so I said, you got to do something. So she said, give me a minute. So she called her pharmaceutical companies and told them that the doctors and nurses in Brooklyn would not accept their products if they did not support her fundraiser. So needless to say, opening night for Dance Theater of Harlem was completely sold out. Headlines in the New York Times above the fold said, the black medical community welcomes Dance Theater of Harlem to Brooklyn. And so that began a series of successful events. I worked with the churches in Brooklyn. We had 600 people coming from the churches just for one night. We did receptions. We did meet and greets. We did dinners in different restaurants. Really saturated the community. You know, we made it a celebration.
I love how you said above the fold, that you nailed it as soon as it was above the fold.
Absolutely.
Wendy, you headed up the third National Arts Participation Survey released this week. What did you find about the makeup of people engaging with the arts in Australia, and how do you even define arts? It's such an incredibly broad concept.
It is. And I think, if anything, that's one of the interesting things that this survey threw up. So this is the third time we've done it. We've done it every 3 years or so. And it's a survey about participation in the arts, but also attitudes to the arts as well. And I think one of the things that came through really strongly is just around that definition of what the arts mean. When you say the arts, people often, they go straight to things like the arts that they see as traditional forms of art, like opera or ballet or orchestras or so on. And then when we actually had people unpick the fact that the arts are reading and listening to music and all those things that they interact and encounter on a daily basis, there was a real moment of realization that they were actually participating and engaging in the arts much more than they knew. And often that was a really pleasant realization as well. Oh, I am an arty person. I didn't think I was. But, well, and one of my favorite quotes from one of the focus groups was, oh, my daughter does ballet. She learns piano. I go to the gallery a few times a year. Certainly read a few books a year. Yeah, occasionally I'll go to some music concerts, but I'm not an arty person. So I think that real need to demystify the arts from those so-called high forms of arts to that recognition that the arts are something that you'll probably encounter four or five times before you've even had your first cup of coffee. And when you start to realise the role that the arts play in the quality of your everyday experience, then you become much more aware of the importance of them.
You're listening to The Drawing Room, and my guests are Donna Walker-Coon. She's the author of Invitation to the Party and works to engage new audiences in the arts. And Dr. Wendy Weir, she's the Executive Director of Arts Strategy at the Australia Council for the Arts. So, Donna, going to the opera or to watch, you know, classical music, some of the things that people do, I mean, if you set aside whether you think going to the opera is an enjoyable experience or not, but just generally, the act of turning up, knowing what to do, how to sit and stand, when to clap, it's all pretty terrifying, to be honest.
Yes.
And I think class comes into this a little bit too. You do.
Absolutely.
Actually, before you even go there, class, it's
number one, even more than race.
You reckon?
I believe in America, that is our number one issue. And because we don't address it, it just gets deeper and more challenging. We pretend to be a classless society for the most part. We tend to think that class does not affect one's choice or behavior, but it does in so many ways. And now with such a huge wave of immigrants coming into our country, you know, we see it even more so. You know, so until we really look at that, I think there'll always be this big separation of who feels invited and who has a seat. You know, is that my seat? Can I really sit there?
And also, once they're there, not having to behave the way people have always behaved. I mean, I don't even know what I mean by that, but do you know what I mean by
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Particularly in opera.
That's what I mean by that.
Yes. Because there is an, you know, I worked on an opera for New York City Opera Company. It was called Margaret Garner. And they call my company. I have a consulting company. We've been in business for over 20 years. And we're often hired by major cultural organizations to bring in diverse audiences. And so this opera was about the story of Margaret Garner, a true story of a slave woman who murdered her daughter rather than have her being brought up as a slave. So it was a 3-hour opera with subtitles. And they asked me to use that to bring in the Black community. I said, oh, what a wonderful story. A Black mother killing her daughter. I'm sure they'll come running. And so, you know, the behavior of when people were to sit in their seats, that became a grave concern. They said, well, what should I wear? How do I sit? What should I look at? And they reported to me that as they were going into their seats, that the white audiences were looking at them like, what are you doing here? You know, so it's a dynamic that has to be broken. So we have to be brave. We have to be bold. And we go where we feel we should have a seat.
Wendy, does it matter who's on stage, who's making the art? I wonder what impact that has on the kind of audiences you're bringing in.
Yeah, I mean, there's a direct correlation between the people who are making the art and the art that you're seeing as well. And so, you know, the diversity of audiences is related in no small way to the diversity of practicing artists. And we are seeing that one of the great things that was coming through the survey as well was that, again, in terms of diversity, the people who are attending arts feel that there is a much greater diversity of work being presented than they did previously, and that they see that as something that's really, really important in a wonderfully rich society. But because of the stories that you see and hear and experience through all those kinds of mediums, they enable a growing kind of social and cultural understanding. So people learn about other people who are from cultures other than their own through experiencing their art. And that's one of the chief ways of connecting and building empathy and all those things that are so important at a moment in time where there's a lot of social division globally and there's all these kinds of issues. And you can sort of see this as being an antidote to some of the challenges that we're having socially as we come to terms with living in this world in this moment and, you know, in Australia, but also globally, I think.
And Donna, is there also a kind of economic or business rather element to this too? It's kind of diversify or die in the current climate, because audiences, you know, mainstream society is saying this just doesn't fit with our reality anymore.
Well, yes. I mean, we see it on different layers. In Broadway, my company works a lot on Broadway shows, and certainly that first generation of Broadway theater goers are now in their 80s and 90s. So they just can't go. And so who do we replace them with? And then at the same time, you have productions that do have a multicultural theme. And so producers are being much more aggressive about bringing in our audiences of color for one reason, and that is to hit the bottom line. So, you know, we have no illusion about the fact that there is an increased interest in diversity. A lot of it has to do with making sure that we make goal. That's the same in nonprofit as well as commercial industry. So I focus on making sure I can create streams of income that relate to building diverse audiences so that it validates the effort and allows us to be sustainable.
You mentioned Broadway. Does it kind of come in waves as well? Wendy, thinking about shows like Hamilton, which introduced hip-hop fans to Broadway for the first time, and, you know, it's gone international. I mean, I know everyone's obsessed with Hamilton now. It's like the thing, right? Are there moments and shows that break the barrier and bring a whole new lot of people into a place where they previously may have felt excluded? And with Hamilton, not only is it a race, but really we're also talking youth, a lot of young people taking an interest.
Yes.
Yeah, I think there can be those breakthrough shows. And then I also think there's a sort of sustained kind of movement towards shifting those sorts of demographics and making people realise that they're, you know, that they do have, that they're invited, as Donna said, that there's a place for them and that they absolutely should be there. One of the interesting things that we've been doing, it's not directly related to the arts participation survey that's just come out, but a related piece of research around First Nations artists. And again, it's all related to codes, you know, to, and it's about knowing your audience and thinking if you want to build an audience of First Nations people, you know, I think it was actually, I can't remember the name of someone who said it, but not doing your audience research is like inviting someone to dinner and not asking them if they've got any allergies or dietary preferences. You know, you need to know the people to bring them in. And some of the challenges were, again, about not knowing the codes, not knowing when to laugh, not knowing when to clap, not knowing when it was appropriate and not feeling welcome. So I think that there will be moments, there'll be sort of breakthrough moments, and we've got some really great stuff happening around First Nations cabaret and things like that in Australia right now, which is great and really breaking through with a younger demographic too. It's the work that they want to see, and it's presented by diverse people and made by diverse people. And I think this is, people love and engage and really welcome that. I think what came through in the survey as well is that a lot of people are engaging online as well, and that's booming, but it's not substituting or cannibalising live attendance. So people are also experiencing that work digitally and then getting familiarity with it, which then emboldens them to move out into live performance as well.
Donna, both Australia and the US have seen a reduction in national arts funding since the global financial crisis. Does that make it more difficult to advocate for diversifying audiences when the knee-jerk reaction might be, let's play it safe, let's mm-hmm. just stick to what's working here, let's not right. take risks?
Actually, no. I have seen quite the opposite. I've seen a deeper interest and investment. I travel around the country extensively, and it is for one topic alone, and that is, can you teach us how to engage diverse audience? Can you show us how to talk to our neighbors? We have a new group of Hmong coming in. We've got people from Suriname, from, Sri Lanka, all these places. How do we engage them? So I see it increasing tremendously. We have no choice. We must do this.
If these are the questions being asked, I'm going to be really provocative now by people. How do we engage in diverse audiences? Is that because the people asking that question are all not diverse people? Like, they just don't have any idea how?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And they've been accustomed to not doing it because they didn't have to. But because of the changing demographics, and as you mentioned, the lack of funding now, we have to look to see, how do we make our sales goal? How are we sustainable? Well, why don't you ask the person across the street?
Wendy, are you seeing the same in Australia?
Yeah, I think I could, without naming and shaming, I've seen in my time as an arts maker, but now, at the Australia Council for the Arts, some really good best practice ways of doing this, and then some terrible ones. I remember hearing one company who will not be named who wanted to engage their Chinese audience, so they thought the best way would be putting an ad in the Chinese language paper and doing a letterbox drop in certain postcodes because that's where they thought those people lived. And again, it's about not knowing your audience at all and not having that kind of open dialogue. I think programs that engage with diverse communities during their creative development are often very, very successful. Mm-hmm. And, thinking about who you're, actually connecting in that level rather than just trying to talk at someone, but, engagement, true engagement and reciprocal engagement, not one way either, is what often will lead to a much better outcome.
And Donna, you're here in Australia to talk about these very issues.
Yes. Yes, I will be speaking tomorrow at the Victoria Creative Remix Summit. And then on Monday, I'll be speaking at Deakin University.
Do you find Australians are kind of thirsty for this kind of information?
Yes, I do. And it's quite wonderful. I am thrilled because it gives me hope. Because again, this is a city, a country where there's tremendous movement. And if we don't look at the arts as being the foundation of what keeps us as human, allows us to communicate, then I think we lose our moment.
Well, this has been a good moment. I've enjoyed it thoroughly. Donna and Wendy, thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you so much.
And that's Donna Walker-Coon. She's the author of Invitation to the Party and the Vice President of Community Engagement at the New Jersey Performing Arts Centre. And Dr. Wendy Weir. She's the Executive Director of Arts Strategy at the Australia Council for the Arts.